right. Hi, my name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, guys. So my sobriety date is February 1st, 2016. I have a sponsor in a home group. My home group is Midtown in Bethesda, Maryland. We meet at 7:30 every Sunday. So normally I'm there today, but it's always an honor and privilege to speak anywhere. And I met Stan when I celebrated my 2 years at Potomac. And I'm very grateful that Sam asked me to come and speak. You know, it definitely is a hike. And but to give this much little back from what AA has given to me is, honestly, it's like nothing. And I'm incredibly grateful for the life that I have today, because I didn't really have one when I was coming into AA. And for me, AA was kind of just the last house on the left. It was my last solution. I didn't know what else to do. I had a lot of preconceived notions about AA. I don't know where they came from, but I just kind of thought that it was like a cult, and that they were talking about God. I don't really know what my perception of God was at the time, but I just had this preconceived notion that AA was kind of just like this place that, you know, that obviously people go to get sober, but I definitely thought like this whole kind of cultist idea, and it just wasn't where I saw myself ending up at, you know, 26, or I guess I was 24, 25 at the time, trying to get sober. So, but once again, you know, it has given me a life that I didn't, you know, I couldn't even imagine. I didn't really know what kind of life I wanted at the time. I just know that if I can continue to do the things that I was doing, that I wouldn't really end up with a life at all. And the life that I have now is just, it's incredible. I have friends, I have family, you know, I have family and friends that came with me on this drive here. And before, it was just kind of me in my room, just really not really doing anything. And anyway, so I'll kind of get into my story, what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now. And I try to eat up as much time as I can. So I grew up where I live now and where I grew up is all in the same area. I'm from Maryland. I'm from Montgomery County. And had a pretty normal childhood upbringing. My parents got separated at a young age. I don't think any of these things, I don't know what makes me an alcoholic. The more I think about what tries to make me an alcoholic, the more I kind of, the more I relate out. So what the big book says and what I try to keep it as simple as possible is what makes me an alcoholic is what happens when I drink. Because the same thing happens every time. What happens when I drink is I can't control the amount that I drink. And so what that means is that usually on a given night, I'll overshoot the mark probably more than 9 times out of 10, you know, 19 out of 20, 29 out of 30. But I'll overshoot the mark every single time. Maybe one night I won't, because the previous night I way overshot it. But pretty much when I go out to drink, you know, I'm usually drinking hard liquor and I'm chasing it with beer. And I'm usually almost always going to end up blacking out and feeling sick the next day, and that happened every single time. No matter what I had to do the next day, you know, if I had to be up at a certain time, if I had to be somewhere at a certain time, that all did not matter. I may still get there, but I'll be incredibly hungover, and I'll be sick, and I'll be pretty miserable. And looking back, you know, to see my friends, none of them really did this, you know, the people that I hung out with. I mean, some of them were alcoholics. Towards the end of my alcoholism, I was pretty much hanging out with alcoholics. But the people that I grew up with, if they had something going on, they would either stop drinking, they would call it a night early, but that to me didn't make sense. You know, I would still get, you know, I may still get to the event, but I would just be incredibly sick and just present, but not really there. And that was like an ongoing theme for when I drank. So what made me an alcoholic is how much I drink. And even when I stop drinking, I'll continue to drink no matter what was on my plate. You know, if I was, you know, I had a PBJ for a while, and I would still continue, you know, to get my fix no matter what, despite the circumstances. You know, if I had to study for, like, you know, something for school, or if I had, like, something family thing going on, if I really wasn't supposed to drink, I would continue to drink, even if things were bad. So I couldn't stay stopped. And so that's pretty... What made, you know, as the book says, can't control and can't stay stopped. And when I overthink it, you know, that's what kind of relates me out, and that's what drives me a little bit nuts, you know, because I think all the time, I remember when I was trying to originally first get sober, you know, I was living with my dad. And my dad, genetics were very, like it's him and me, you know. But when I was trying to get sober, why could this guy who's so much related to me, how could he stop so easily? When I was trying to stop to drink, you know, he took all the liquor. I don't think he really had any liquor in the first place. But he just didn't keep any liquor in the house, and he didn't drink. You know, this guy didn't have, you know, he didn't have a reason to stop drinking, but he just dropped it. But for me, I was failing out of school. I was drinking every day, you know, and if I was in the house, he was going to kick me out if I continued to drink the way that I drank, or if I just continued to drink at all. I mean, how is it so easy for him to stop? And that perplexed me, you know. Like, I didn't understand how he could stop so easily, you know. And I was thinking, like, genetics and, like, all this stuff. How could this liquid have such control over me? You know, it just didn't make sense, you know. It just didn't make sense. So if I overthink it, if it just keep it simple, just like the book says, that I can understand, because that would happen to me every single time. So I kept it simple. When I drink too much, and that was very evident. You know, I could look at the evidence based on my life, and that's what happened every single time. When I drank too much. And even if things were bad, I continued to drink. You know, if I'm in my dad's house and I'm not supposed to be drinking because he's going to kick me out, I'll still drink. And that just, you know, it just didn't make sense to me how he could do it. And you know, because a part of me, I really wanted to continue my drinking because I wanted to continue to have, you know, what I thought of fun. I wanted to, you know, how was I going to meet people? You know, how was I going to meet, you know, maybe like my future girlfriend or wife if it wasn't in the bar? And all these things, you know, how I was going to hang out with my friends if they hang out in the bars. Just, you know, I was just so worried about giving up that life, you know. But looking back, I wasn't really present at all. You know, I was there for the drink rather than hanging out with them, you know, now that I'm able to kind of rethink all that. So, that when I looked at alcoholism in that kind of sense, what happens when I drink is I drink too much and I can't say stop. That was simple. I could understand that, and I just kept that for me. So, as I said, I was growing up. I grew up with my, you know, parents in Montgomery County. They got separated. They separated at a young age. As I said, I don't think anything about my story makes me out. You know, I don't think anything about my story makes me alcoholic. The circumstances, you know, I just think what happens, as I said, I just keep it simple, is that what happens when I drink is I can't control the amount that I drink and I can't stay stopped. So I remember them separating. It was a tough, I think it was pretty tough. I remember my dad leaving, and, you know, I don't remember a lot of the childhood, but I remember him, you know, leaving the house and driving away, and that was very, you know, upsetting. And I remember going, you know, to therapists. I remember in school we were in, like, they had, like, a separate things for kids with that had divorced parents and all of that, could have made me different, But once again, I don't think that any of that matters. So pretty normal childhood upbringing. My parents separated, and then my mom and we all lived. You know, I was able to see both of my parents. I remember being kind of quiet as a child, definitely a little bit reserved. So when I did eventually, you know, drinking, alcohol definitely kind of brought me out, and I thought it was like, you know, this kind of, I, you know, I really kind of liked it because of the way that it made me feel. So eventually I did find my first drink. My first drink was in my friend's basement, and we drank, I think, like Kahlua. I don't know, some like really sweet drink. I don't remember, you know, I didn't black out. I had a lot of fun. These were guys that I grew up with. And so I didn't black out, had a lot of fun, and I didn't crave it the next day. You know, I've heard of people say that, like, you know, like they got this feeling that when they drank, that they immediately wanted to, you know, that they may have immediately wanted to do it right away. My experience was, you know, was not that. I drank it, and that was that. You know, I don't remember. Maybe it'll change as I get, you know, sober down the line, because I'm starting to, you know, like re-experience things. But I don't remember craving it the next day. I don't remember wanting to do it again. I don't think I did it again for a while. And really that was that. You know, I drank with my friends and it didn't do it the next day. And it was fun. Eventually, you know, high school started and I started hanging out. You know, these guys that I was growing up with, they both moved to California, so I was a little depressed. These were two people that I always hung out with, and they both happened to move at the same time. And these were the only two people I hung out with. So I was kind of, you know, looking for friends, you know, and looking for people to hang out with. As I said, I was kind of quiet. You know, I didn't go out of my way to, like, talk to people a lot. So I started hanging out with some people who happened to smoke. And, you know, marijuana and drugs is a part of my story. But for me, what brought me here was alcohol. So what I have to realize that I have alcoholism, because no matter what, if I was doing drugs, if I was smoking, I was always drinking as well. And if you were to give me alcohol, I would definitely drink it right away. And if I couldn't find anything, I would still be drinking alcohol. So for me, it doesn't matter what I like. One speaker says, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter what you give me. If it's in within arm's reach, I'll probably end up doing it. I'll probably put it inside my body. And I related to that. I definitely, you know, as I said, I hung out with these guys who were smoking, and it kind of brought my perception is that it brought me out of the house, because I was hanging out in the house a lot. I wasn't hanging out with a lot of people, but when I was on this, you know, this substance, I was definitely kind of out, and I felt like, you know, I was like participating, because it was getting me out of myself, and that's what drugs give to me, is that, you know, they make me feel a different way than I want to feel, because of this spiritual malady that that I suffer from, and that's what I'm starting to realize. You know, I have 2 years. I'm starting to realize this whole spiritual thing, which is something that's very difficult for me to understand, because I'm very tangible. You know, I want to see something to believe it, and that's why, you know, this whole alcoholism thing was so difficult, because, you know, I couldn't understand why, because it's, you know, this whole spiritual thing is something that is a lot of faith and believing in a higher power, which I remember going to church as a child, but I can't ever remember my perception of God. I can't remember, you know, how faith. I remember going to church, but that was pretty much it. And I think as soon as I turned about 18, my parents, all of a sudden, you know, they said, if I don't want to go, I don't have to. So I stopped going. And that was pretty much that. And it wasn't until the rooms of AA that I really had to rely and find a higher power. So that's what I continue to search for. And, you know, thank God that the book says that we are willing, because I'm 100% willing because of the life that I have today. But it's definitely something that I have to work on, because it doesn't come natural for me. So tangible, you know, I want to be able to see it to believe it. But as I'm getting sober, that's what my sponsor tells me all the time. You know, he says, as you're getting sober, it's very evident that something's working in your life. Because when I first came in the rooms, I don't know what I was like, but he said it was very much different. You know, I was definitely, he would call me a scrub, you know, like every single day. And so I can usually tell how well I'm doing based off how much he makes fun of me. But in a good way. So, you know, I went to church. I don't really know my perception of God, but once again, I'm 100% willing because of the life that I have today to, you know, to put my faith in this thing that I can't really see. And, so as I said, you know, I definitely smoked a lot of marijuana, and that just brought me out of myself. It brought me a reason to get out of the house. And that's just what was around, because at that age, it was easier to get that than alcohol. So, as I got older, I started getting into harder things. I'm not really going to go into that, but they just brought me to a bottom very, very quickly. And I was in an accident, and I got prescribed, you know, medication that I abused, and it just set me off a course. And it was very evident, you know, what these things did when I was taking them, you know, like where my life was going. it brought me to a bottom really quick. Alcohol also brought me to a bottom as well. These just brought me there a lot quicker. Well, in my experience, it just brought me there a lot quicker. Alcoholism brought me to a bottom that was just as dark. And these brought me to that same bottom. It only just took, you know. So I was going in and out of rehabs at a, you know, at a young, I mean, I don't know how young, but I was going in and out of rehabs before I was even able to, you know, legally able to drink. And I was going to inpatient, or I went to outpatients, and then I went to an inpatient. And during all this time, you know, I thought it was very normal, my drinking and my drugging, because in my head, you know, I would say, oh, you know, like, everyone's doing it in college, you know, but really, I wasn't going to college. I was hanging out on college campus. But, you know, I you know, I was dropping out at a community college. I was hanging out with people who went to Maryland, and I was like, oh, this is so normal. You know, everyone in college is doing it. But, you know, I mean, I didn't realize this until like a year later. Like, I was like, I'm not, you know, I wasn't even going to college. I was just, it was just an excuse to drink and drug the way that I wanted to do. And it just made it right, you know, like it made me feel right because I was hanging out with people who were, you know, who were doing these things, same things. But the only difference was, as I, you know, as I said in the beginning, is that like my friends, they could still continue on with their lives. These people that were in college, and yes, some of them were doing, you know, like hard drugs, and they, you know, there was definitely a lot of drinking involved, but they were still, you know, it's like, hey, I got an exam tomorrow, you know, better not do that, or hey, you know, like stuff's going on, I'm getting a little there, I don't want to do anymore. Not obviously, I wasn't in college, so I was just going, you know, I was just doing it until the crack of dawn, you know, it just didn't matter. And I, you know, there was no off switch. As soon as I started, you know, there was I either blacked out or I ran out. And that was very consistent throughout my story. And that's what it was every single time. I either blacked out or I ran out. So, but like as far as alcoholism, that's, you know, that was definitely in the early stages, you know, that was, you know, I would see like glimpses and pieces that maybe I might be an alcoholic or addict, you know, maybe. Or we're talking about alcoholism, but maybe, you know, maybe I might have a problem, you know, because how is it, you know, that I'm hanging out with these people, but, you know, like something's going on, they're still able to show up. You know, they're still showing up for life, but I couldn't. So I, you know, as I said, I was going in and out of rehabs, hanging out with college people, even though I wasn't in college. And eventually I went to an inpatient rehab. And that kind of, you know, that you know, I went to an inpatient rehab. There were people there. They had part of the rehab, I guess, had people come in that were in jail, and they would come in and just, you know, kind of, I guess they would get released on, like, good behavior. I don't know how it was, but they were in the jail for drug problems. And then there were also people that were in an inpatient who were there, you know, with either insurance or something. They would kind of mix them all together. And that, you know, that definitely kind of scared me straight a little bit. You know, I was hanging, you know, I've never been to jail. I've been arrested, but never, yeah, never in jail. I got arrested once for stealing like a bunch of peanut butter cups, you know, like Reese's peanut butter cups. I wasn't like the best criminal. So jail was like very scary for me when these people were telling me about what it could be like. So I don't know what clicked, but something clicked with these drugs and like jail. So I was talking to them, and you know, when I got out, so I was talking to them. I was in there for almost about a month, and something clicked that like if I continue to do these drugs, then I'm going to end up in jail, and if jail sounds very scary for someone who steals peanut butter cups, that I do not want to go to jail. So I got back home, and I was good for a little while. No, you know, I was definitely done with drugs, and I started, you know, it wasn't soon after that I started drinking a little bit, and because drinking was legal, you know, so for me, drinking was still okay, you know, drinking wasn't the problem, drugs were the problem. So I started getting a little healthier. I was drinking. I wasn't drinking every day. I was definite, but what was always come with my drinking is that I would black out. So whenever I did normally drink, I would, and in I have a tendency, so what my drinking usually starts, when I get sober, when I drinking my normally starts is I normally start with a little bit, and then it gradually increases every time I try to get sober. So it would, you know, like a beer with a couple friends out at like a bar, and then it'd be like maybe like a 6-pack or like a 12-pack the next week, and then maybe like a month later I'm drinking vodka again, because vodka just got me to where I wanted to get, but you know, like 0 to 60. I like taking shots. I didn't like drinking beer, because beer I would just get really bloated, and I would just have to go to the bathroom so much that I couldn't really get drunk, because I couldn't fit any more down. So I like drinking beer as a chaser to kind of keep the buzz going, but I just couldn't, I couldn't black out with beer, because I just couldn't keep enough down, because I would just keep having to go to the bathroom. So I did what I thought was, you know, I did what anyone who has this feeling good after they get out of rehab is, you know, I got married, you know, I got engaged, and then I got married like right away, like a year after rehab, because I thought like this was going to fix me, this was right. And what I did was, is I made this girl my higher power. You know, after I got sober, I realized that I made her my higher power, and she was trying so hard to fix me and make me, you know, she was a non-alcoholic, she was not in the program, a lot of aspirations, a lot of dreams, and a lot of, you know, good things going for her. And she, unfortunately, when I'm sober, I'm really nice, I'm a great guy. When I'm drinking, I'm not so great, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So we got married. I was sober, and I think there were glimpses and pieces of my alcoholism that she realized, because I would kind of hide bottles sometimes. I would whenever we went out, she would always drive home, because I would usually overshoot the mark. I wouldn't always black out, but I would usually get pretty drunk. We got married. I made her my higher power, and things were going pretty good. You know, she signed me up for classes at college. You know, she did a lot of things for me that I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And we were trying to help each other out, you know. I thought I was doing the right thing. She wasn't from this country. So I thought, you know, if we got married, she'd be able to get a green card. And she really wanted to become a doctor. She's very smart. We don't talk. My sponsor says it's probably best. You know, I guess, you know, working on the amends is, some things are just, you know, better left not touched because of the damage that I caused in that relationship. But she's incredibly smart. So I think that she is, you know, on her way to become a doctor. And I thought I was doing the right thing because she wasn't from this country. And that if we got married, you know, we'd be helping each other out. She was obviously helping me out a lot with school. And, you know, when I was with her, I was studying. I was doing well. And then, you know, maybe it was like a Friday or Saturday night, we'd go out, and I'd overshoot the mark, you know, every single time. My drinking was mostly then on the weekends. You know, I was drinking a lot on the weekends. We were together for maybe 2 or 3 years, and eventually what happened was my alcoholism eventually, you know, caught up, and we ended up splitting up, and it really wasn't, you know, it was obviously pretty ugly. We still don't talk. You know, what my sponsor does have me do is I pray for her, and that definitely relieves some of the burden. So we split up, and what I turned to was alcohol. And alcohol then was my, you know, was 100% my solution, you know, because the way that I felt, I lost my higher power, and alcohol immediately took that place. So I definitely always thought that, you know, that my drinking was a little bit abnormal, but now that she wasn't there, my drinking just kind of took off. And it was like a year or two of me drinking a lot. I was drinking up as soon as I woke up, as soon as I went to bed, I was drinking. I was kind of, you know, maintaining the buzz throughout the entire day. And I got, you know, within a year, I got very, very sick. I was, you know, having seizures. I've been to the hospital. These were negative consequences, you know. But in my head, you know, I said, you know, I'm still not getting any DUIs, you know. But that's not to say that I wasn't drinking and driving, you know. So I just, you know, I don't know what it was, but I would always kind of, you know, I worked close to home, so I would kind of drink a little bit at work. So by the time I got home, I was already, you know, by the time I was driving home, I was when it was starting to kick in, and then by the time I got home, I usually, you know, finish up a little bit more, and I was pretty much drinking all the time on the weekends, and it just, I mean, I don't really remember the last year or two of my drinking. It was pretty bad. I was somehow still able to wake up and go to, you know, work in the morning. I was still taking my classes. I was barely passing. I kind of, you know, I spoke to my teacher about me and my, you know, ex splitting up. Maybe that, you know, maybe she would give me some brownie points and feel bad. And I did end up passing, but this was after I started getting sober. But you know, maybe there was something there. So what happened was is I think I, you know, I went to the hospital again. This was like my second time, and you know, everyone's trying to figure out what's going on with Paul. You know, what's going on with Paul? What's happening to him? You know, something's changed. Something's different. It was always kind of different, but now it was very evident that something was different. You know, what's going on? So people would see me at the hospital, and you know, even my ex came, and you know, she's generally worried for me about what's going on. And, you know, I would tell them, oh, I don't know what's, you know, I would always say, like, I don't know what's going on. I mean, I knew what was going on is that I had untreated alcoholism, but I did, you know, I didn't want to give that up because, you know, I was at that, I mean, they call it like the jumping off point. I couldn't realize my life with or without alcohol. It's the only thing that I would like waking up to. It's the only thing that like made me feel okay. And to give it up, you're like telling me to give up alcohol was just, you know, no way, you know. I was like 25. I was like, how am I gonna hang out with my friends in the bars? How are we gonna go out? You know, how am I gonna meet people in the bars? You're telling me to give up, you know, like my entire lifestyle is just crazy. And I just couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine my life with or without it because it was bringing me to the hospital. It was making me physically sick. You know, I would drink so much that like I couldn't eat because my throat was just so much in pain. And I was showing up, you know, I was drinking in the mornings just to kind of keep a buzz. People were trying to figure out, you know, what was going on. So I was in the hospital, as I was saying, and I had all these things on my head, all these probes, you know, all these things. They're trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe there's like some kind of neural connection that's causing him to have these seizures. And I could have just said that, I've been drinking every day for a year, but I was saying, you know, maybe I have, maybe I'm epileptic, you know, that's what it was, you know. You know, I wasn't epileptic for like 24 years, and all of a sudden, late onset epilepsy was obviously the answer. So I went to like a neurologist and to read these scans, and he's like, I have no idea what's going on, you know, but here's some epileptic medicine, so maybe that'll stop the seizures. So, and I knew it, you know, like I knew what was going on. I just didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to admit that I was an alcoholic. So what I did was I moved into my dad's house. Before that, I was living with my mom for a while. So I thought living with my dad would be different. It was like 10 minutes away. And maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But what I did do was, My dad wanted me to not drink in the house. I mean, no one wanted me to drink in the house. And, you know, obviously, I guess start going to meetings. So I went to meetings when I was younger. I went to meetings when I was doing, you know, a lot of the drugs. I went to inpatient or outpatient when I was going to drugs. But the meetings that I went to, I just didn't relate. You know, then I was like 19 or 20, I think. I was like, no way, you know, there's no way I'm going to try to get sober right now. I'm just too young, you know, like I'm too young, you know, and I'm incredibly grateful for getting sober at, you know, at the age that I was at, because I don't think I would have made it 100% the way that I was drinking, how many times I was in the hospital. There's just no way. So I went to a meeting on Monday nights called Promises, 8:30, and it's in Bethesda as well. And it was very bright. I remember being super bright, and I was very sick. One of my family members brought me there because I don't know how he heard about it, but thank God for that meeting. I don't remember anything about it, nothing about it. I just remember I got a couple numbers, and these guys that would call me all the time, I don't know what they even talked. I don't know what they talked about, but they called just to hang out. Because I was super new, I was super fresh. I didn't, you know, I didn't, you know, want to talk about God or anything like that. I just wanted to stop feeling the way that I was feeling. That's all that I knew. And when I got, you know, and I experienced in the past when I stopped drinking and drugging, I would feel okay. So I knew that knowledge that obviously something was going on. So, I'm going to jump back, but basically when I had those probes on my head, I'm sorry. I realized that I was an alcoholic because the only thing I could think of is how do I get out of this hospital soon enough to get more alcohol? And that's when I realized that I had a problem with alcohol. It was like right then and there, because people were telling me that I might have all these different things, but I knew that I was in the hospital because of alcohol. I had all these things because of alcohol, and the only thing I could think of is how do I get more alcohol? That was not normal. You know, that was 100% not normal. And that's when I realized that, like, my relationship with alcohol is not normal. And I knew that I had a problem. I 100% knew that I had a problem, but I wasn't at that place to willing to change. So I came into the meetings. I came the Monday night group, and I didn't really work anything. I kind of just came to hang out. I still had this notion in the back of my head that how am I going to meet people? How am I going to hang out with my friends if alcohol isn't involved? You know, I thought I could go out to the bars and just like drink water, and that worked for like a week or two. But I had no idea. You know, I had no idea that, you know, like just really what it took in order to stay sober. My sponsor said it's, you know, basically like an investment. The more you put in, the more you get out. So the more I put in AA, the more I got out of AA. And when I'm half-assed in AA, I'm not really getting much out of it. So the first year, I was definitely, you know, very grateful for everyone that was helping me trying to get sober. And I had this thing where I would get sober for about 3 months, and then I would get really antsy, you know, I would get really like squirrely. And then I'd go out with on like a date, and we go out to a bar, and I had no power to stop me from that first drink. You know, I was powerless against the first drink every single time. Because, you know, this girl power that I was with was more powerful than my God. And every single time that happened, every single time, you know. And that happened, I would get 3 months, I would go back out, get sick for like a month. Because, as I said, what starts is like two beers. I'm like, okay, I got this. Then it turned to a six-pack, and then I'm drinking in the, you know, drinking by myself again. And that happened three times within the first year, get a couple months, you know, feel good, and then go back out, get a couple months, feel good, and go back out. So the last time that happened, I remember I was at my dad's house, and I bought a bunch of vodka, and I was drinking it during the day, and I'm not working or anything. I'm trying to get sober. And, you know, he comes home from work at, like, 12 o'clock, and I'm, like, I'm pretty hammered. And, very, you know, just very not normal. And I'm like, oh, you know, my dad's coming. What am I going to do? Oh, I'll know. Like, I'll hide under my bed. And I'm hiding under my bed at, like, 26 years of age from my dad. And I was, like, pretty humiliated. Like, oh, my God. Like, what's going on, you know? I can't believe that, like, I'm hiding from my dad because I'm too drunk to, you know, to interact with him. I know by then, you know, in the beginning of my alcoholism, I thought I was hiding it. But by then I knew that. I mean, it was very evident to see if I was drinking, you know. He always said I sounded like I had marbles in my mouth because I, you know, just the way that I was talking. So I was under my bed. I was hiding from my dad. And I was like, you know, if I keep doing this, I'm not going to make it, you know. Like, I didn't know what I wanted out of life. But I knew that I wasn't going to really have anything. You know, I think in the beginning what I really wanted was, like, you know, like a car. I wanted a house. I wanted all, like, the materialistic possessions. But I knew none. I 100% knew none of that was going to happen if I continued to drink the way that I was drinking. So my dad ended up leaving, and I just had this, I don't know, I just had this realization, this moment of clarity that, like, if I continued to drink, I was not going to make it. So very next day, I went to my meeting. I continued to drink, you know, I mean, that's, that was my thought process. I might as well drink everything, you know, because I'm not going to throw it out, and I'll just go to the meeting the next day because I'm already drunk today, so I might as well enjoy it. So that's exactly what I did. And then I went to my home group, picked up a 24-hour chip again, and I called my sponsor, and I'm like, okay, you know, like, what the hell does it take, you know? And he told me, first off, just call him every day, you know. I call my sponsor every single day. If he doesn't answer, I leave him a voicemail. I call him every single day. And he says, you know, find service positions and find, you know, you should be going to group, you know, you should be going to a meeting every single day. So I said, oh, you know, okay, I'll, you know, be going to a meeting every single day. Because I wasn't working or anything. So meeting every single day. And I had five service positions. I was calling them every single day. I was giving rides. I was getting rides. I got super involved because I was just very tired of just, I was just so tired of just waking up again and just realizing, like, how did I get here again? I was done. You know, I was completely done. So I asked my sponsor, you know, like, to tell me what to do. And I listened 100%. I was going to meetings, a lot of service positions. And that's really what helped in the beginning. What kept me sober was, you know, getting all, you know, keeping my life full, you know, getting all these service positions, showing up, helped me out immersely, you know, because in the beginning, I don't think I had a home group. I didn't have any service positions, not calling my sponsor, not working the steps. So AA did not work. But when I was utilizing my sponsor, when I was working the steps, I mean, drastic difference, you know, 100% drastic difference. So, you know, I was asking him what I should be doing. And he was basically telling me where I should work, where I should live, you know, all these things. And I listened to him, and it was working, you know, everything was working. Just like he kind of said it was, because I mean, I didn't know what to do. So I was asked, you know, like pretty big decisions of, you know, should I pick this job or this job? I was able to graduate from the college, and I was able to, pass some exams, and I was able to get a better job. And I was asking him where I should work, and he told me where I should work. So I picked, where he thought I should work. I said where I should live. He picked, you know, the sober house. And I was living with a sober house with a couple other guy friends. And, I mean, it was phenomenal, you know. I was having a lot of fun. And then I got a bit of a curveball because the girl I was dating for a little while, she ended up getting pregnant. And I didn't really know what to do. You know, I was kind of lost. I was, you know, super upset that, you know, I didn't know, you know, I only knew the way that I had this clear idea about what I wanted to do with my life and where I wanted to go and how I wanted to live, and having this news that I was going to have, you know, my kid along the way was definitely a curveball. But what my sponsor told me was that people, you know, anything that happens in the rooms is, you know, that we're usually never the first ones, or I'm never the first one. So there are other people who had the same thing. So I started talking to these guys who had, you know, kids at a young age, or kids when they were newly sober too. And I asked them, you know, a lot of things, if people had any advice. And their advice was, you know, really helped me get through the whole situation. And I was able to get a lot through that. You know, going down the road, since I was able to make some of the amends too to my family and all that, I just remember in the beginning of AA, you know, when I first came into the rooms, I was just always uncomfortable. I never knew where to sit. I just always felt, you know, now they call it restless, irritable, and discontent. And I didn't know that I had that at the time, but I 100% had that. And I was just always uncomfortable. And, you know, in the beginning, I always wanted these materialistic possessions too. And I thought that, like, those were, you know, that, like, those were going to make me feel the way that I wanted to be feeling. And they do for like a week or two, you know, I've had nice things. And, you know, since coming in AA, you know, I was able to graduate, get a better job. And, I didn't know where I was going to end up when I first got in the rooms, but the life that I have today is, I mean, I'm incredibly grateful for it. And, I just remember always feeling uncomfortable, and the comfort that alcohol gave me and the way that it made me feel was something that took a while, you know, working the steps and making the amends with my family is something that alcohol gave me, you know, very much more quickly, you know, because it was all this spirituality. And I just, I just remember always feeling, you know, so bottled up and so, you know, just a lot of pressure, you know, like a shaken up soda bottle or something like that. And what alcohol did is that it kind of relaxed everything. And it just made me, it made me speak the way that I wanted to speak, you know, it made me feel the way that I wanted to feel, and I chased that, you know, whether, no matter what it was. And since I've been coming to these rooms after this, you know, after this little time, I'm just so much more comfortable just where I'm at now, because there was a lot of shame, there was a lot of disappointment that I felt I brought onto my family, you know, because I didn't, you know, I always kind of compared, you know, my grandparents talk a lot about my dad, and I always kind of compared myself to my dad, who worked his way through college. You know, he had PhDs, very smart, you know, very smart guy, you know, like, I mean, like the spectrum, he's out here, and I like bring it back to the middle, you know, just to try to keep it, straight. And I just felt like I was a huge disappointment, and I had all that weight on me. And really, you know, after all these years, after talking to my dad, really, he just, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's true for most parents, but, well, I would imagine that it is, but I think they just want you to be happy, you know. I think that's the bottom line. That's what he told me all the time. Like, I just want you to be happy. You know, I don't care what you do, just be happy. And I would always, like, yeah, right. So I had all this shame and guilt that I was carrying along with me, and I just continued, you know, when I was drinking, just continued to drink just to try to hide it all. And what I've gotten out of these rooms was just the ability to sit down and sit still and just be comfortable with who I was and where I was at. And, I mean, the relationships that I have with my family are just, I don't know, you know, just, I mean, they're phenomenal, you know. I hang out with my dad. I talk, you know, I text my parents very regularly. And that really wasn't going on before. Before it was mostly going on. It was like, Paul, like, are you okay? You know, like, what's going on? And now it's, you know, just try to check in about, like, you know, what's going on with our lives. And as much as, you know, as much as the things are nice, you know, though, you know, these relationships that I've had back with my family are just, you know, they're amazing. And I'm incredibly grateful that the AA has been able to give me things like that. And as far as my daughter, you know, she's almost turning 1 year old now. And thank God for people in the rooms. Thank God for my family that, you know, I'm able to be there and help raise her. And I don't know what it would have been like, you know. I don't know if I, you know. But in the beginning, when I did hear that she was coming, you know, I definitely made sure that I had a good foundation. So, right before she was coming, I still made sure that I didn't give up any of my service positions. I had all my 7 meetings, and I hung out with his people as much as I could because I wanted to stay grounded in this thing, because I knew that that was working for me. So, I mean, now, obviously, you know, my meeting attendance is a little less, but I still go to my meetings. I still have service at every single one of those meetings. I still talk to my sponsor every single day. And I'm just incredibly grateful, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for the life that I have. And obviously on the outside, things have gotten a lot better, you know, looking to move out soon, you know, we're going to buy a house. And, you know, the job, I was unemployable before I got here. And now I have, you know, I have a job at a pretty good company, and I was able to graduate. And all those things, you know, all those, you know, when I tell my sponsor that, you know, if I don't know something's working in my life, he points back, you know, when I first came to AA, I was working at GameStop, and the only thing you had to know at GameStop was know your ABCs, because they categorize the games, and that's like all I could process was like how to do your ABCs when I first came in, you know, and that was like, even that was difficult, you know, but to go from that to, you know, now I work, you know, in IT. To go from that to where I'm at now is just, I mean, it's a big difference. And he tells me that all the time because I don't see it. You know, I'm always like, you know, well, where's, you know, where am I going next? You know, where's the next thing? I always like to compare my, you know, I love comparing myself, you know, and I love to, you know, and that's what, you know, that's just something that I got to stop. But I always compare myself, you know, these people that I went through in high school, You know, like, look where, you know, look at my friend in high school, you know. Look where he's at now, you know. Well, like, that could have been me. And he's like, well, you know, well, that's not you. You know, you're at, you know, where you are now is where you're at. And I just have to talk to him all the time to kind of keep, to, you know, like, thank God for him. You know, like, he keeps me in check. And I definitely use him at my disposal as much as I can. So based off all the outside things, you know, like, obviously something's working. But for the way that I'm able to sit in a meeting, the way I'm able to have the relationships with my family, the way I'm able to show up or talk to my dad and not be worried, or really talk to anyone and not be worried, has been just amazing, you know, making the amends. I remember making amends to my mom, making amends to my dad, and making amends to my brother, and it was a lot, you know. But, you know, thank God, you know, like, thank goodness that I was able to, and with the direction of my sponsor, what I'm supposed to say. And after talking to them, you know, definitely a lot of burden was lifted off, and I still feel it time to time, but it definitely is a lot less than from when I first came in the rooms. And I don't know, you know, if anyone's new, if anyone, you know, my best advice for what I found coming into the AA was, just based off, like, what my sponsor said, is, like, the whole investment, you know, the more you put in, the more you get out. And that's 100% true, because the more I was putting in, much more I was getting out. And, I mean, he wants me to sponsor, like, 10 people and all this stuff, or, you know, hold back. But you know, when Sam asked me to come out here, I didn't know where it was, I didn't know what time it was, but I just said yes, 100%, because when anyone's asked if anything from AA, I've learned to say yes because of everything that I've gotten out of it. And there's just no way I could pay back, you know, even a drop about what I've been getting out because of the life that I have today. And I just, and, you know, so always yes. You know, if anything's ever asked of me, sponsor asks me to do something, I'll say yes. You know, it might take a little while sometimes, but I'll still do it. And I don't know, that was my greatest advice, you know, and that's when it really started working was when I really started using this program to its full potential. And, I mean, for me, you know, I like to look at it and analyze it, but it was really, you know, there's really not much that you have to do besides listen to your sponsor. Once that was the only thing I really had to do, just listen to him, and he told me everything that I had to do because I really couldn't figure it out. You know, I didn't know how to work the steps. Well, you know, you have someone who does. You know, if you have any, you know, questions about what if you should or should not do something, you know, I called him up and he would pretty much answer it. And now that I have a little bit more time, I'm able to, you know, get a good idea, but I still run pretty much everything by him. And so I like to, like, not make this program so complicated, because that's what I did in the beginning. You know, I just remember trying to figure out why I was an alcoholic, you know, how does this work, how does that work. But for me, if I just kept it really simple about, you know, how my life was going when I was working AA versus, you know, how it was going when I was working it my way, it was very evident that it didn't, you know. And so now my biggest thing is searching for a higher power, and I'm 100% willing, because before I was using the groups as to kind of find that higher power, and that's something that's just difficult for me. And I only say that just because, you know, maybe someone else is struggling with a higher power. I 100% relate. And so what I do now is I pray, and I read, you know, I read page 60 to 64 every morning, and that seems to be, and I think it's helping. You know, I pray every night, I pray every morning, read those pages, and I call my sponsor, and I ask him, you know, just for his advice. And since then, I don't know, I'm just incredibly grateful, and very grateful to be here and speaking tonight. So thank you guys so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.